It's MRCTV's public service announcement with Brittany Hughes and Eric Shiner.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the MRCTV podcast public service announcement. I'm Brittany Hughes. My normal partner, Eric Shiner, is actually out today. I know, being such a total lazy bum, let me tell you. But that's okay. You're stuck with me for the day. That's all right, though, because we have got a lot to talk about, a lot to get to. The left is absolutely losing its mind today over some stuff, so we're going to talk about all of that. Real quick, though, before we jump into our topics today, if you are listening to us on mrctv.org, thank you so much for tuning in and for coming to our website. You can also download this podcast every single Wednesday at Google Play or Spotify or on iTunes. Pretty much wherever you get your podcasts, that's where we're at. So you can download us, listen to us as you're going down the road, dropping the kids off at school or heading to work. Maybe you're going to school yourself. But lots of different ways to listen to the show. We appreciate you guys being here with us. We're going to jump right into it because there has been so much happening today, especially when it comes to this new abortion bill that is passed in Alabama. If you guys recall, last week we kind of talked a little bit about the bill that had recently passed in Georgia. And of course, pro-abortion advocates and the left were flipping out about that. And, you know, Alyssa Milano losing her mind and saying that she's going to boycott the state of Georgia, and Hollywood saying that they're not going to come to Georgia anymore and all that nonsense. So we talked a little bit about Georgia's bill, what it was, and the reasons for some of the outrage behind it and why it was absolutely ridiculous, and how common sense heartbeat bills are. These bills that protect unborn children once a fetal heartbeat can be detected. And we talked a little bit about how that's just, I mean, that's so common sense it shouldn't even really be debatable. You've got a living human being with a heartbeat that is alive. That is simply a scientific fact. That's not based on your opinion or how you feel, or it's not based on circumstance. It simply is a basic scientific fact that that is life, that is a child, it has a measurable heartbeat, and that those lives are sacred and they deserve to be protected. So we talked a little bit about Georgia. Now, today, news broke overnight that the Alabama State Legislature has passed their own abortion bill, or rather more of an anti-abortion bill, and it goes even farther than Georgia's bill does. So this is actually a bill that would pretty much outlaw abortions entirely. There's only one exception, and that is if continuing with a pregnancy would be life-threatening to the mother. So that's the only exception that's carved out in this Alabama abortion bill. Otherwise, it says no abortions at all, period, and it does not include provisions for rape or incest, which is another thing that we kind of talked about last week, and I'm going to talk about it again today because this is, it's interesting because this whole lack of a rape and incest clause to this bill is what many abortion proponents are using to push back on this bill and saying that it's this horrible detriment to women and it's stripping women of their rights. So we're going to talk a little bit about a provision like that, what that means, why the left is using it, and why it's incredibly disingenuous. So we're going to kind of debunk some of the myths about this bill, and get into that because I've been seeing a lot just over the past few hours, just this morning, a whole lot of misinformation coming out, but then a whole lot of things that are true, that are very true about a bill like this, and why it's so incredibly important, why we have to have bills like this. So, like I said before, the Alabama abortion bill does not include provisions for rape and incest. Georgia's does. There are a couple of other states that have passed their own heartbeat bills, which limit abortions past about 6 weeks is when you can usually detect a fetal heartbeat. So Ohio's, for example, does not include a rape or incest clause, but the Alabama abortion bill would actually be the strictest abortion bill in the entire country if it were to be signed into law, because not only does it outlaw pretty much all abortions, and not only does it not include a rape or incest exception, but it also threatens physicians who perform abortions with a felony that could carry up to life in prison. So this, it's not just the restrictions that it puts on abortion, but also the penalties that it puts on abortion. Now, I've been seeing a whole lot coming out this morning, again, from mostly from people who haven't actually read the bill. And, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was one that came out this morning, and she tweeted about how it would make abortion a felony even for women who've been raped. First of all, let's clarify really quickly. If you actually look at the text of the bill itself, it does not jail women. Neither does the Georgia bill. You hear a whole lot about that, you know, this whole nonsense about how Georgia's heartbeat bill would criminalize abortions for women, and it would criminalize miscarriages is one of the biggest misnomers out there, which is absolutely ridiculous. Georgia's bill actually specifically carves out the difference between an intentional elective abortion and what they call in medical terms a spontaneous abortion or a miscarriage. Nobody is criminalizing miscarriages. That's absolutely ridiculous. It's very specifically listed right there in the bill. And Alabama's bill does not criminalize miscarriages either, nor does it threaten to jail women. It threatens to jail physicians who perform the abortion. So that's what it's talking about when it comes to the criminal code here. So don't let anybody, and you don't have to take my word for it, you can go look at the bill itself. It's right there on the Alabama State Legislature's website. You can look it up. It's very, very easy to read for yourself. Don't let anybody try to tell you that this bill is going to put women in jail, because that is simply, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about protecting unborn children, which, again, regardless of feeling, regardless of emotion, regardless of, you know, whether this child was planned or unplanned, regardless of whether the parents are together, regardless of any other circumstance, the scientific reality is this is a child, this is a living human being, and it is worth protecting. Their life is worth protecting. So that's what this bill ultimately seeks to do. The other thing about this bill, and we talked about this again kind of last week with the Georgia bill. These bills, nobody in their right mind, particularly the lawmakers who pass bills like this, think that it's actually going to go into effect. Everybody understands that right now with the debate on abortion, that this is something that's going to be challenged in court. There's going to be at least a temporary stay put on it, and it's got to go through the court system. That is the goal. That is the entire goal. The goal of the Alabama abortion bill, just like with the Georgia abortion bill, just like with the Ohio abortion bill, it's to challenge Roe versus Wade. It's to ultimately get this issue back in the courts, fight it up to the highest court in the land, and challenge Roe versus Wade, because Roe versus Wade was an unconstitutional and absolutely ridiculous legal decision that even abortion, the abortion industry understands that it's on extremely shaky ground and that it would have a very high likelihood of being overturned, particularly with the court that we have today, and also based on just the fact that the legal precedent that makes up Roe versus Wade, first of all, it wasn't really an abortion decision. It was a decision on medical privacy, and it was absolutely ridiculous and unconstitutional. So the entire point is to use bills like this to push through the courts and up to the Supreme Court. So again, everybody kind of understands this. So when you see abortion advocates come out and say, well, you know, this is just a goal to challenge Roe versus Wade. Yes, that is exactly what, that's not a big secret. Nobody's trying to hide that. That is exactly what this is. That is exactly what the pro-life movement wants. So there are some obviously some big arguments that are coming out now against this abortion bill. And other than just the basic argument that, you know, the abortion industry and those who support it simply want abortions on demand and have no problem, it, particularly in the first and even second trimesters with elective abortions, they're trying to use these very nuanced arguments, and they're very They're very easy to pick apart. So we're going to go through a couple of the more common ones that I've seen today. And the first one is obviously this rape and incest clause. So we're going to talk it primarily it's due to the rape factor. It's not as much incest, but so the rape clause, the rape exception that Alabama's bill does not include. So, of course, the left immediately is coming out and saying, "Oh my gosh, this bill is going to force women to carry her rapist's child." So let's talk a little bit about what that means, because that does happen, all right? And we're not going to shy away from that. That does happen. It's very rare. Rape and incest only make up about 1% of all abortions in the entire United States, of which there are roughly 1 million every year. So you're talking about a very small percentage, but it does happen, and there are documented cases of women getting pregnant from rape. There are also many documented cases of women choosing life for their babies after rape because they understand that that life is not responsible for how it came into being. Now, the abortion industry does not want to talk about those women. It doesn't want to acknowledge those women. It doesn't want to acknowledge those children. And it doesn't want to talk about how many of them have grown up to be perfectly successful adults, because it kind of undermines their argument that all rape victims are going to choose abortion, and that to carry a rapist's baby is the worst thing that could ever happen to you in your entire life. Now, admittedly, we understand rape is horrible. Rape is tragic. Rape should never, ever happen. In my opinion, if you actually wanted to get serious about preventing women from having to carry their rapist's baby, you would make it as easy as humanly possible for them to carry guns. But the left doesn't want to do that either. We don't want to talk about women protecting themselves. We don't want to talk about empowering them to be able to fight back against somebody who means them that kind of physical harm, which you certainly can't do in some of the most dangerous places in the United States. You can't do it in Chicago. You can't do that in Washington, D.C. You can't do it in New York City. You can't do it in pretty much the entire state of California. All of these liberal-held areas that want to strip people of gun rights and their ability to carry weapons to protect themselves, if we really wanted to talk about women being able to protect themselves against a situation like this, then we would be having that discussion too, and liberals would be fighting for every opportunity to make sure that women had the ability to protect themselves. But of course, they don't want to go into that discussion, so they immediately go into the abortion issue and start talking about how, well, we need to allow women who have been raped to have an abortion. Well, first of all, by then, the trauma has already occurred. By then, there's no opportunity for the woman to protect herself. The trauma is already there. Having an abortion does not undo the rape. It simply creates a second victim. Rape is an assault on a person's body against their will. Abortion is an assault on a person's body against their will. It simply creates a second victim. Now, the level of care that we need to give rape victims, the level of support that they need, those are maybe vastly different, but it has absolutely no bearing on the scientific reality that there's no difference between the life of a baby conceived in love and the life of a baby conceived in rape. While the circumstances may be entirely different, there's no difference in whether or not that life is it exists and is worth protecting. Okay, so the fundamental question here, because they like to toss out this absolutely horrible, they come up with the absolute worst possible descriptions that they can. You know, what if a 10-year-old is raped by her dad and the baby is diagnosed with some horrible fetal anomaly? And they like to throw every single possible tragic, just hypothetical that they can to try to create a scenario in which pro-lifers feel guilty about saying, no, we believe that the life in that woman's womb should be protected because it is a life. The fundamental question that needs to be asked here, and that pro-lifers need to ask themselves, is it a baby or isn't it? If you are pro-life and you believe that that is a life, that that is a baby, and that it is valuable simply based on the fact that it exists, then the circumstances don't affect that basic fact. They may affect a whole host of other things, including levels of care and compassion and what we need to do for these women, but it doesn't affect that basic concept, okay? So that's the first thing that they like to throw out, is all these horrible hypotheticals about the rape scenario, which again, one of the most interesting things about that argument is that because rape only accounts for about 1% of all abortions in the United States, you're carving out the exception to the rule in order to justify the other 99%, because that's ultimately what they want, right? It's not about, okay, we'll put a rape provision in this bill and suddenly it makes it okay and we'll support it. No, they wouldn't support it even if it did have a rape exemption. So that's a completely disingenuous argument. The other thing that's interesting about that argument is this is the same side of the ideological aisle, the pro-abortion, the abortion industry, Planned Parenthood, Leanna Wen, the president of Planned Parenthood. You notice how over the past weeks, when it comes to the opposite kind of bill, when it comes to late-term abortion bills and far-left states that are starting to push abortion all the way up through the end of the third trimester, which some states already have those laws and have for years. New Mexico, for example, is one of them. There's a clinic in New Mexico that offers abortions for women up through 37 weeks, which in some cases is considered full term. That's insane. But when we talk about third trimester abortions, the abortion industry's answer to that is always, well, those are super rare. They're not worth mentioning. They're super rare. They only occur in X, Y, and Z cases. You know, most often they point to terminal fetal anomalies, which is not true. Even the Guttmacher Institute, which is a pro-abortion organization, has an entire article that I've linked to many, many times on their page that explains the top reasons why women seek out third trimester abortions, and the vast majority have to do with the fact that these women were unable to get the funds to procure an abortion before, that they had trouble getting to an abortion clinic, or they encountered, another top reason was that they encountered a relationship snag that ended up changing their mind about abortion. Again, this is not me speaking. This is the Guttmacher Institute, which is a pro-abortion group, explaining why many women choose third trimester abortions, of which there are about 13,000 a year. As I've explained before, 13,000 a year, that is enough unborn babies to fill up half of the LA Chargers stadium out in California. Okay, 13,000 late-term abortions occur every single year. But to the abortion industry, that's quote-unquote rare. That's so rare that it's not even worth talking about. It's so uncommon that it really is a ridiculous topic and we shouldn't even be bringing it up. But then they want to point to rape, which accounts for only 1% of all abortions. So if you took that literally, that's about 10,000 abortions a year. They want to point to that as the reason to justify the other 99. So my question is, why is it rare when we talk about third trimester abortions, but it's suddenly this huge epidemic when we talk about rape, which is an even statistically lower number of abortions? So again, they like to pick and choose when something is rare or when something's an epidemic based on whether or not it supports their point of view or their argument. So again, it just goes to show how incredibly disingenuous this argument is when it comes to the rape exception, because the statistics don't back it up. They simply don't. Another argument that they like to throw out, which it would be funny if we weren't talking about such a serious subject, but it's this idea that men just want to control women's bodies. You see that all the time, particularly if you're on Twitter. If you're not, I don't suggest you get on Twitter because it's really a terrible website. But if you're on Twitter, this is probably something that you see all the time. All these leftist politicians, abortion industry advocates, they come out and they say, well, men just want to control women's bodies. Well, here's my question, and I haven't really seen it asked a whole lot, but I'll bite on this subject. Why? What is the motivation behind men wanting to control women's bodies. I'm very interested. You see this argument a lot that men just want to control women. And I'm trying to figure out why in the world would they want to? The vast majority of pro-life men that I know are men who are responsible men. They take care of their families. They love their children. And they understand that life is sacred. The vast majority of abortion advocates that I know, particularly men, are people who have no problem with casual sex with no consequences. They have no problem using women's bodies. And abortion is great because if an unintended pregnancy were to happen, there's an easy out there. So it's interesting to me that this idea that men want to control women's bodies, I'm not seeing the motivation for why they would want to what? To force women to have babies that they are then legally and financially responsible for? Because a lot of guys don't want that, particularly ones that have no interest in faithful, monogamous, long-term marriages and relationships. So I don't understand the motive behind why men would just want to control women's bodies. I don't understand how that would be a benefit to them, what that would ultimately result in. I'm sure that if I were to ask somebody on the far left who makes that argument, they would point to some fictitious Handmaid's Tale. Or what is it, Handmaid's Tale? I've never actually seen the show, to be honest with you. But they like to throw out this imagery. And I guess it's a bunch of women, if I understand the premise correctly, women who are just forced to breed in some mythical land in the future where women have lost their fertility and we only have like a few women who can actually bear children and now they're being used as brood mares and whatever. If you have to resort to a fictitious television show to justify this argument, you have no argument. That's ridiculous. If you have to just, post screenshots from HBO of women stomping around in red hoods or whatever, red robes, in order to justify this argument, you have no argument. Because that's not real life. So somebody please explain to me why men would simply just want to control women's bodies when the pro-life argument results in more babies being born that men would then be responsible for legally under the law. That makes no sense. Another argument they like to point to that's kind of tied into this is the idea of sexism. Well, these laws are just sexist. First of all, I get so incredibly sick and tired of the left completely ignoring millions of pro-life women. Millions. It's not a small, teeny tiny percentage. There's not just like five of us floating around out there. Millions of pro-life women. In fact, the vast majority of the pro-life movement is led by women. Women are the ones on stages speaking out about this issue. Women are the ones coming out and telling their story of how they have been harmed by the abortion industry or how they used to work in the abortion industry and have come out of it since they realized what it does and the truth. Women are the ones who are driving this issue, not men. There are plenty of men that have been fantastic supporters of the pro-life movement, and they absolutely deserve a say in this issue. I have always stated, show me the woman that can get pregnant on her own, and I'll show you the woman that can demand men stay out of the argument. But there's not a single woman on earth that can get pregnant on her own. So men absolutely deserve a place in this argument. But for the majority, they have been strong supporters of the women who are leading this movement. Four of the sponsors of Georgia's heartbeat bill, there were seven sponsors, four of them were women, three in the House and one in the Senate. Four of the seven sponsors were women. If Alabama's law is signed, which again, another thing that's been coming out just in droves this morning is, well, this was passed by 25 white men. Well, if it's signed into law, it will be by a female governor. So what's your argument then? That this is just men pushing this on women? That this is just men who want to, for some reason, control women's bodies that you can't explain why? That's absolutely not true. And it ignores the millions of women who support bills like this, the millions of women who lead these marches, who show up in the streets, who come to these rallies, and who argue for their children and for the children of others. So again, It's a complete and total disingenuous argument that is, it's not based in fact. If they wanted to base it in fact, they would have to actually grapple with the reality that women are leading this movement, that rape are, you know, extremely rare statistical reasons for abortion, that even in the cases of rape, there is every scientific basis for stating that this is still a human life, that a heartbeat does begin at around 6 weeks into pregnancy, which is only about 4 weeks gestation, by the way. They would have to grapple with the actual facts. They're not willing to do that. So instead, they rely on hypotheticals. They rely on these tragic situations that they dream up in their heads. They rely on this narrative that all women are like lumped into this pro-abortion movement and that they speak for all of us. They have to come up with arguments that aren't based in fact. So that's ultimately where we're going to leave this, is this idea that, again, yes, Alabama's abortion bill is one of the most extreme anti-abortion bills in the country. It's designed that way for a reason, because abortion is extreme. It is the extreme killing of an innocent, unborn human being that cannot defend itself. That is what abortion is. Abortion is in itself extreme. So the idea that we shouldn't push back on such an extreme genocide, such an extreme violence in an extreme way is ridiculous. Yes, it's an extreme bill. And yes, it needs to be. So that's where we're going to leave it for today. We're probably going to be talking about this issue coming up in the next few weeks because I don't see it going away. There's some states that are moving further and further left on this issue, some states that are obviously moving further right, and it's all gearing up towards something. It's all gearing up towards what I believe is going to be a lengthy battle in the courts. So we're going to be following this issue as we go along. Again, thank you so much for sticking with us though today. I appreciate your time, and you can download us on mrctv.org. Again, we can be found on Google Play, Spotify, iTunes, pretty much anywhere that you want to get your podcasts. Eric will be back with me again next week. I am Brittany Hughes. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.